months, you can go to democracynow.org. They're a fantastic array, especially around the documentary category, both the short and long category, as well as our interview with Ryan Coogler, the Oscar-winning director of Sinners.
When you're ready to let go of that car you no longer need, KFAI is ready for you. Our vehicle donation program is available 7 days a week to help you arrange for your free pickup. It's easy, it's free, and it matters. Donate at kfai.careasy.org or call 855-277-2346.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and around the world at kfai.org. The community's true voice.
Hey everybody, it is pledge drive time here on KFAI. Bet you're here because you really enjoy getting the full scoop that Democracy Now! Serves up. And if you dig listening to Democracy Now!, you should let us know. Please let us know with a donation. Help us to keep bringing you Amy Goodman and her crack team dutifully delivered to your eager ears every day here on this community-led, people-powered, public service-focused radio station. Please give us a call at 612-375-9030. Operators are indeed standing by and ready to take your call because it's pledge drive. Please give these kind folks, give our loyal volunteers, our listener members a buzz at 612-375-9030. Let us know how much you appreciate having this unique and remarkable radio experience on the air that is KFAI on your radio dial, your computer, on your mobile device, and especially in your community, because I know you love it. We all do. That's why we're here. That's why I'm volunteering, and that's why you're listening. Together, we meet at this special space on the airwaves. Good afternoon. This is Mini Culture Presents. My name is Michael Whetstone. We're here on your radio dial every Monday afternoon following the blunt truths of Democracy Now! Give us a call at 612-375-9030 and make a pledge to real community, people-powered public radio. I'm a listener, I'm a volunteer, and also a financial donor, a sustaining member. We all need to work together to keep this wickedly special station thriving. If you're shy, you don't want to talk to anyone, you can also visit the website at kfai.org and click the donate button. It is quick, easy, and safe and secure. And we here in your community genuinely do appreciate it. KFAI needs it. KFAI needs you. Give us a call at 612-375-9030. 612-375-9030. And thank you. And as I said, this is Mini Culture Presents, and today we are going to be playing some of the latest stories from the cast of Mini Culture Producers that you have come to know. We are going to begin with the story Minnesota's Duck Stamp Dynasty from producer Allison Young. We're also going to hear from a 1970s Iron Range miner, Lynn Henderson, who was one of the very first women to hold the job and work in those mines. She sits down for an interview with producer Gina Favano. And then in the second half of the show, we are going to go behind the music here in the Twin Cities. We're going to check out a pair of stories about two local choirs, Choir Walk With Me, an oddball gang that celebrates the esoteric and the weird, right up KFAI's alley, self-described as kinky and sassy. Plus, Amazing Grace, which is a dementia-friendly gospel chorus. Then we are going to tag along with Matthew Schneeman as he attends a rehearsal practice with the 1990s tribute band You Oughta Know. And if you would like to help keep these very vital and hyper-local stories on the air, please do consider making a pledge today to Mini Culture's radio home, KFAI. Support real community, truly people-powered public radio today. Your donation makes a gigantic difference here at the station. Just visit KFAI.org and click donate. You can do that anytime. But since this is the pledge drive, you can also give us a ring. We're your friends, we're your family, we're your neighbors, we are your community. Please let us know that you value this unique radio station by giving us a call at 612-375-9030, 612-375-9030, and help to keep the lights on at KFEI. Go to kfei.org and click donate, or give us a call at 612-375-9030. But now, here is Mini Culture Director Erica Janik.
This is 10,000 Fresh Voices, a project of Mini Culture. I'm your host, Erica Janik. Each year, the federal government holds a unique art competition with a very specific goal: to choose the most compelling original painting to become the next federal duck stamp. Waterfowl hunters are required to purchase this stamp along with their hunting license, and the revenue raised allows the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to buy and protect wetlands across the country. Over time, the contest has grown fiercely competitive, and this past year, Chaska artist Jim Hotman claimed his seventh win. Among outdoor enthusiasts and duck hunters, Jim is a well-known name. In fact, he's so well-known, he even gets a mention in the movie Fargo. KFAI's Allison Young has the story.
Oh, that's terrific.
It's just a 3 cent.
It's terrific.
Hoffman's blue-winged teal got the 29 cent. People don't much use the 3 cent.
Oh, for peace, of course they do.
That's a scene from the 1996 film Fargo. Marge, played by Frances McDormand, is cheering on her husband Norm's second-place win in a fictional postal stamp contest.
It's terrific.
That contest might be made up, but the Coen brothers' name drop of Hotman isn't fictional at all. Jim Hotman is real, a neighbor of the Coens growing up in Minnesota, and the most successful artist in the history of the federal duck stamp competition.
In the real federal duck stamp, it's first place or nothing. So in kindness to the character, I guess, they just wanted him to come away with something, so they gave him the 3 cent stamp, I guess it was.
Even back then, Jim was already famous. Along with his brothers, Joe and Bob, the family has dominated the federal duck stamp competition for more than 3 decades. And this past year, Jim pulled ahead of all of them, winning the contest for a record 7th time. Sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the annual Juried Duck Stamp Competition is the only federal regulated art contest in the United States. Artists submit original hand-drawn or painted depictions of waterfowl in their natural habitat, and the winning art is then printed on a $25 stamp that duck hunters are legally required to purchase along with their hunting license. Jennifer Wright is the program assistant in the Duck Stamp office, and she tells me this program has helped set aside 6 million acres of land and is likely one of the most efficient conservation funding models anywhere.
98 cents of every dollar goes towards wetland conservation. I think it's done a great job raising over $1.2 billion since it started.
And it all starts with art. Jim Hotman grew up in a family of artists. His parents painted, and he tells me it was natural for him to pick up a brush, as it was for his older brother, Bob, but maybe less so for his brother, Joe, who had an entire career as a physicist before jumping into what is now known as the family business. Jim says having siblings all doing the same thing is great for his work.
So I may look at one of their paintings and give them all the most feedback I can, and then I know they'll do the same, and all of our paintings end up being better as a result. So, yeah, we compete with each other, but we help each other probably even more so.
That feedback was especially important this past year. In order to keep things from getting too monotonous or focused on one duck, the program chooses 5 eligible species to paint. This year's included the bufflehead, a duck that migrates through Minnesota but doesn't stay for long. Jim says they're compelling birds, particularly in flight.
They're so cool looking when they fly. They have this striking black and white pattern. So I took the few decoys I had here and painted them to look like buffalo heads and set them out on the lake just after the ice went out. And I spent 2 days just photographing ducks flying by and flying into the decoys. And I got some great photos of buffalo heads. And that's kind of what I based the birds on.
Jim felt good about his acrylic painting of three buffalo heads in flight. But once he saw Bob's entry, he wasn't sure if he had the goods to pull out a win.
You know, when we were probably 3 weeks into it, another week to go or something, I just, you know, we were comparing up, but his was kind of blowing mine away. I mean, I had three birds flying, but it didn't have the feel I wanted. He said, well, maybe you should put some waves in there, because I had it set over real calm water. As soon as he said it, I knew that was the thing to do, and I changed the calm water to wavy water, and that just kind of gave the whole painting more life, more action.
That small change won over the judges in a competition with nearly 300 entries. Minnesota has always been well represented in the contest, accounting for about 10% of the entries. The next largest is 5% from Florida. Artwork is judged by a rotating slate of five judges representing hunters and biologists, as well as art experts and philatelists, people who study stamps. They're selected for the role by the Secretary of the Interior. And judging is a one-time assignment. No one is allowed to return. Judges also can't confer with one another, though they can consult with an on-site speciator waterfowl biologist to verify details like seasonal plumage and habitat accuracy. As Jennifer Wright tells it, there are no imaginative ducks here.
We are aware there are only so many poses a duck could be doing, but take multiple reference photos in hopes that you're able to create something unique.
Today, Jim and his brothers all make their living as artists, spending plenty of time wading through swamps, observing wildlife, and hunting in waterfowl protection areas, lands that their art helped create.
And I think a big part of this art thing with the ducks and the wildlife is you're trying to trigger people's memories, you know. The people that like this kind of work generally spend a lot of time outdoors, and they love it. So if you're sitting in your house in January and there's no ducks around and there's no water around, you know, someone can just look at that and be happy that it reminds them of good experiences they've had. I mean, I guess that's all I'm trying to do.
For KFAI, I'm Allison Young.
You're listening to 10,000 Fresh Voices, a project of Miniculture. I'm your host, Erica Janik. Since the 1890s, the Mesabi Iron Range in northern Minnesota has produced an abundance of iron ore. The mines attracted all kinds of workers, including immigrants. One group that was harder to find in the mines, though, were women. Lynn Henderson was one of the first women to work on the range starting in the 1970s. KFAI's Gina Favano caught up with Lynn to learn what those times were like.
Before I moved to Minnesota, I lived in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania for many years, home to historic blast furnaces that have produced most of this country's steel. And that steel was created from small iron ore pellets known as taconite, much of which is still primarily mined in northern Minnesota on the Mesabi Iron Range. Minnesota's largest single mining operation is called Mintac. Located in Mountain Iron, the Mintac facility began operations in 1953. My friend Lynn Henderson worked there as a young woman in the 70s. Lynn had an affinity for hard work. She was drawn to the rugged lifestyle that working in the mines required. I sat down with Lynn at her kitchen table outside of Duluth to chat about what her life was like during her time in the mines and what she liked or didn't like about it. You'll hear her pet bird Pepsi singing in the background for much of this.
I think I like the challenge. I kind of like the getting down and dirty, you know.
Labor.
Love the hard work and the labor and the bib overalls and the steel-toed boots and the hard hats and the fun. I mean, we had a lot of fun. Oh, I loved working in mines. We had a good union. We had good women. We had a lot of fun. When guys would do stuff to us, we'd turn around and do it right back.
Lynn truly enjoyed working in the mines. But like most things in life, it was more complicated than that. Her father, who also worked in the mines, and other members of her extended community initially cautioned her about what to expect from the culture there.
It's not going to be easy, Lynn. You're going to be working with a bunch of men that don't want you there. We all knew that. And I think that's why we tried extra hard to prove ourselves that we could do it. And I think for the most part, women did a really good job. And there were a lot of really good men up there. And you have to figure, there was men working that had their wives working in there. They had their daughters working in there, their nieces, their next door neighbor lady. Those guys were very supportive. And they didn't like the way some of these guys acted either.
In the early 1970s, federal affirmative action policies and the Equal Employment Opportunity Act paved the way for marginalized people, such as women and black and brown people, to be hired in lines of work that perhaps weren't as easily accessible or welcoming to them before. As such, the mines on the Iron Range had record numbers of women working there during this time period. A few years later, the Minntac mine was the scene of massive layoffs due to, among other factors, an economic recession and the cheaper cost of importing resources, as well as the decline of the American steel industry. While the layoffs were mainly seniority-based, as in last hired, first fired, it disproportionately affected those hired under the Affirmative Action Clause, most of whom had less seniority, and whose presence in the mines weren't necessarily welcomed by all of their colleagues. Lynn goes on to speak about the discrimination she faced as a woman working in the pit mines in the early days of an integrated workforce. And not only as a woman, as a gay woman.
I was working with a gal that we were on the same track gang, and she told me that there's a whole bunch of women in Superior and Duluth that play softball. There's tons of women. There's a bar in Molly's Bar in Superior. There's a whole life out there for you, Lynn. And I thought, But I was playing softball, and there was a softball team that was made up of all lesbians. And then in those days, you couldn't call, nobody called you a lesbian. They were all dykes. Well, a lot of people knew, but, yeah. You know, there were ones that didn't like that. It was new. They didn't know what to do with a gay gal, you know.
Sports were an important part of the culture. It encouraged solidarity and fun, and the way Lynn describes it, her softball team played an especially important role in her community and acceptance around her identity. The men's sports leagues regularly got time off to play their big games, but not the women's. So Lynn and two of her teammates got creative about calling out of work to attend a tournament.
The gals at Minntac, we just, when we got shit, we gave it right back. Well, they'd give all the guys on track gang weekends off to go play softball. And us gals were having a tournament in Gilbert. And we were sponsoring the tournament, and we asked for the time off, and they said no. And we had to have the time off because we were sponsoring the tournament. So we came up with a plan, and we all called up that morning and said that we can't come into work today because we have c-titis.
What is c-titis?
Oh my God. Anyway, we won the tournament, and the Mesaba Daily News took our picture, and Monday it was in the paper. So I get to work, the supervisor of the track department comes over to me and he goes with the paper and he goes, c-titis, hey? I mean, you give the guys time off. The mines didn't shut down because us three gals weren't there. You know, we had to do this tournament. You wouldn't give us the time off. Yeah. I said, do you really want to go there with us? I mean, this is discrimination then. I couldn't believe that there was a whole life out there. And I didn't find out about that till I ran into this gal that I worked with at Minntac.
Around this time, Lynn became a founding member of the Iron Range National Organization of Women, or NOW. And at this point, she was also very involved in the mining union.
They were talking about my being a lesbian and stuff, and it was creating a hostile work environment for me. We were protesting, and because of the way we were getting treated and this and that, because we were involved in the Iron Range NOW organization and trying to bring the women's movement forward and march in the streets for pro-choice and equal rights and everything else, it grew some attention down in the cities, you know, it was kind of like the very beginning of people coming out of the closet and places for people to go and things for people to do. And it grew from there. But, you know, you figure, you know, the mid-70s, it was like brandy new. We did what we had to do to survive and keep it light and not have to be buried with emotions. I mean, I literally got fired. They had to hire me back, but they fired me because they found out that I was going with a gal. I come to work that day and they go, Lynn, we're terminating your employment. And I said, for what? And they go, unsatisfactory work performance. And I was one of the hardest working women in that frickin' mind, and everybody knew it. The people that I worked with started a petition. I still have it upstairs in a box somewhere. Track bosses and temporary foremen and people that I've worked with signed this petition saying that Lynn Henderson was more than a satisfactory worker. It felt really good to know. But, you know, it just made me so sick to my stomach of what a shit show there was up there on Iron Range back then. I mean, there were a lot of really good people and hardworking people and good men, good women. I mean, I didn't know. I had my life threatened twice, you know. It was, you know, just god-awful sometimes. But I always kept one foot in front of the other, and I marched on, and I'm grateful that I did. It's because of women like me and others that men are able to marry men and women are able to marry women. And it's pretty open nowadays, and I don't think you're going to ever get anyone to go back in the closet. We're not going back in the closet.
No.
It's not happening. If I have to start marching again, I will. For the most part, I mean, if I were younger and they'd ask me, would you go back? I'd go back in a heartbeat. I mean, I've worked so hard all my life. I used to have a horse farm with 20 horses. You know, I've crawled around on my knees with no knee pads on. I don't even go out without volleyball knee pads on now. Had my hands in, you know, oil-based stains.
Yeah, me
arthritis.
Too.
I mean, I got, it all comes with the labor of love. It all comes with aches and pains, but if I had to do it all over, I'd do it the same way. Because I've learned so much, and I've experienced so much, and I've met so many beautiful people, and, you know, I mean, it's just, I don't think I'd trade any of it.
You've been listening to Mini Culture on KFAI. Support for Mini Culture is provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For more stories like this, check out the Mini Culture tab on kfai.org.
New stories from Mini Culture today. Erica Janik, the new Mini Culture director, is putting all of the new stories into the podcast stream, not just the long format episodes or the podcast. So it has sort of become your one-stop shop for all of your Mini Culture listening. You can catch it all right there. Find it where you like to listen to your podcast. Just search for Mini Culture, MinneCulture. Stick around. After the break, we are going to dive deep into the music scene here in the Twin Cities and highlight a few groups that you may not be familiar with, each full of people who are there simply for the absolute love of the music. If you love the music that you hear on KFAI, please let us know. Give us a call at 612-375-9030, 612-375-9030. It is Pledge Drive. The number to call is 612-375-9030. We would love to hear from you. More new Mini Culture stories coming up after the break.
Minnesota, Mother Nature loves to play tricks.
Oh no, you can't fool me.
This is fake spring.
But there are certain undeniable signs that spring is just around the corner.
60 degrees? You're just trying to get me to put my shovel away.
Like the KFAI Spring Member Drive.
Keep the snowblower primed and ready.
Just go to kfai.org and click donate, because in this time of uncertainty...
Honey, please come to bed.
Not until I see what that low pressure system does.
Isn't it nice to be able to count on KFAI? KFAI, non-commercial, community-powered, rock-solid radio.
Support for KFAI comes from The Dakota, presenting Maruja Limon, Friday, March 27th. Since 2014, Barcelona sextet Maruja Limon has fused traditional flamenco with pop and Latin. With their latest release, Te Como La Cara, they explore Catalan, dembo, salsa, and rumba with experimental electronic sounds to add even more spice. More information about Maruja Limon live at the Dakota is available at dakotacooks.com.
This is a test of the emergency alert system. If this were an actual emergency, the tones you just heard would be followed by information and further instructions. This concludes the test of the emergency alert system.
Got a shop, studio, food truck, or side hustle with soul? KFAI loves small businesses that keep the Twin Cities vibrant. Underwriting with us gets your name out to listeners who care about showing up, buying local, and spreading the word.
Underwriting with KFAI is not just support, it's connection. Let's grow something good together. Learn more at kfai.org/underwriting.
Support for KFAI comes from First Avenue, presenting Pertnair Sandstone's 15th Annual Winter String Band Gathering at the Turf Club, Friday, March 27th and Saturday, March 28th. These two shows will also celebrate the release of their new album, Side by Side. Friday night's openers include the Fretliners and the Main North, while Saturday's show is kicked off by Armchair Boogie and Triple Fiddle. More information about Pertnair Sandstone's 15th Annual Winter String Band Gathering and album release parties at the Turf Club is available at first-avenue.com.
You are listening to a radio station like no other, Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and St. Paul, supported by generous listener members, people who are exactly like you. 612-375-9030, 612-375-9030. Today's episode of Mini Culture Presents is made possible by a grant from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. And if you're enjoying today's stories, be sure to subscribe to the Mini Culture Podcast. You can find it wherever you like to listen to your favorite podcast. And be sure to tell your friends. Share Mini Culture and KFAI with your pals. Spread the word about this great little station. It is the second best way that you can help this station. Spread the word. But the best way, of course, is to call 612-375-9030. 612-375-9030 and make a pledge. It is truly people-powered public radio, and we need you, the public, the people. You help to keep this public radio public and free to the community, commercial free. You know that KFAI is so special and different and rare, but we need you. good people to step up and keep it that way. Please help with a modest financial pledge of support. Standing up for community radio and standing up against corporate radio. But right now we are going to play some more of Mini Culture's recent work created right here at the radio station by our great cast of local producers. One of the things that KFAI does so well, I think, is its arts reporting. Coming up, we are going to visit a pair of local choirs and a cover band. One is a dementia-friendly memory choir out of Walker West, the Music Academy in St. Paul. And we'll also hear from a band who is playing songs that you can't get out of your head, no matter how hard you try. These stories are unquestionably examples of why KFAI is such a great, valuable asset to the Twin Cities. Keep KFAI around with a pledge today. Give us a call at 612-375-9030. 612-375-9030. Or you can also visit kfai.org and click donate if you are shy. It is quick, safe, and secure. kfai.org/donate. Now, here's Erica.
You're listening to 10,000 Fresh Voices, a project of Mini Culture. I'm your host, Erica Janik. There are many ways to cover a song. You can cover it in your own style or mix things up by playing it in a different genre. But there's one way of doing covers that often gets overlooked: doing it exactly like the original. The 90s cover band You Oughta Know takes on that challenge of replicating 90s hits. And the effect is a time-traveling lightning bolt of nostalgia. KFAI's Matthew Schneeman met up with the band to see their tricks and techniques firsthand.
Recently, I sat in on a rehearsal for You Oughta Know, a 90s cover band. They were getting ready for their annual New Year's Eve show. Who's the original iteration of You Oughta Know?
Joe Silberschmidt, Mark Paul Cesaro, and Victor Allen Johnson IV.
That's Joe the drummer talking. Tony Schreiner later joined on bass. They found their lead singer, Sarah Dougal, in a particularly music biopic way. They were auditioning for a new singer but were coming up short, so they went straight to the source.
We went to the 1029 in Northeast. We walked in and saw Sarah belting Mariah Carey, and we're like, oh, there's our singer.
Karaoke, where all the best singers famously hang out.
That's awesome. Yeah. Which song?
It was Hero by Mariah Carey.
Oh, okay. It's a revealing song for a singer.
Absolutely.
So, Sarah passed the karaoke test, smashed it. But the 90s was a long, musically diverse decade, and so the band wanted to see if she had range.
One of the first songs we gave her was Hook by Blues Traveler.
Whoa. That's Victor, the keyboardist, and my friend.
And when she came to rehearsal and she was singing John Popper, we knew we could pretty much get away with anything.
Hook is a hard song to sing, but it's also pretty hard to play. Victor walked me through how he memorized the harmonica solo, which he had to play on his keyboard. A normal cover band would just do like any old solo or something close, but Victor got it specific.
I downloaded the song, chopped it so it was just the solo, and then I slowed down the solo at half speed. So I could like memorize all the notes to it.
Just drove around for like 2 months just listening to it.
Like, and play it in like slow motion.
He played a bit for me.
Yeah, it goes all over the place.
As you can hear, what makes You Oughta Know unique is how far they go to emulate the songs that they cover. And a lot of that goes down to Victor Johnson, his attention to detail. It's kind of You Oughta Know's secret sauce. And his secret sauce, the secret sauce of their secret sauce, is his keyboard.
Yeah, this is it's a Yamaha Montage 7, and it's super programmable.
Meaning, he can have different sections of his keyboard play different sounds that he puts on it. So for Marky Mark's hit Good Vibrations, he can do the electric keys with one hand.
So that allows me to do this other part, which is...
So now he's up to two parts.
This key right here is the clap.
Wow.
So if you put it all together, it's...
And so, with two hands, he can play three parts. Pretty cool. His keyboard has a bunch of presets that he has programmed for different songs.
Okay, so it's a touchscreen. So if we kind of hit me, baby, one more time, that's got everything. This one is a really complicated patch. Like, you got the school bell. And then you got this layered piano that's in octaves. And then there's two different synths. There's the pad.
Oh, yeah. To anyone younger than me, these sounds may not mean that much.
And then there's, I double that with a different synth, so it's like.
But to Gen X, millennials, these sounds are Pavlovian nostalgic hits.
And then up here, I got the orchestra hits, which is like super nice. That's like the most 90s sound there is, really.
Wow, you got them nailed. It's eerie.
Victor has some amazing skills, and it's not just me, his friend, who thinks so. Here's bassist Tony Schreiner.
Almost all props to, you know, Victor for just the amount of time it really takes to, like, hear all the individual sounds. You know, Victor knows every instrument's part.
And Joe.
There's very few bands that take the time to, like, meticulously get the, like, sitar patch added in on Toxic.
Yeah.
Toxic, the Britney Spears song that samples an old Bollywood movie. Victor broke it down, recreated it on his keyboard so that he can actually play the sample live during the show.
And then the fourth time it happens, I have this control pedal here so I can, there's like a sitar, so then it goes.
Whoa. So you can just. As impressive as Victor's technical skills are, he also is like a normal pianist. Here's an old clip of Victor playing Melodia del Rio by Ruben Gonzalez.
Oh, you could go anywhere in the world and you would be like an elite level musician. And yeah. I feel like that's what Victor
and
is.
Yet he's not a diva. He could be. If he wanted.
In the set filled with divas.
Yeah. But Victor is not the only member of the band who goes all out to make these songs great. Sarah sells these songs with her incredibly strong singing voice and pretty good mimicry skills.
What's the distinct Britney's sound?
Oh, yeah.
You got it.
And to add some extra authenticity to Cher's beloved 1999 song Believe, she uses an auto-tune pedal. She showed it to me.
Around, or?
Yeah, so it's just the key that you can rotate around. And then there's a gender, which makes it higher pitched or lower pitched. And for Cher specifically, we choose to lower the gender because she had kind of a lower voice.
The famous Cher.
A Cher.
That's a good Cher.
So.
Similarly, Tony, the bassist, also has a special little machine to take these covers to the next level. The talk box.
That's coming out of a tube, but if I put it in my mouth.
It's that crazy instrument used by everyone from Peter Frampton to Tupac, where a little tube goes from a speaker into your mouth, and the shape of your mouth actually changes the sound coming out.
I'm not speaking. Like, I'm only shaping.
You're lip syncing.
I'm only shaping the sound with my mouth. There's no sound coming out except for the synthesizer.
Seeing Tony do the talkbox live was hypnotizing. It's awesome. It's weird. He's not talking, but he is. Or is he just a synthesizer talking? Is it the synth talking through Tony or Tony talking through the synthesizer? I don't know, but it's awesome. Here's Tony singing Black Streets Don't Leave Me. Tools, tricks, and talent add up to a very powerful show. In your promo, Victor, you got a great summation of the catalog of songs you do.
I think I said something like, we want to play the type of songs that you didn't know that you knew the words to.
That's good.
Yeah, that wave of nostalgia that hits when you hear a song that you hadn't thought about in two decades, and then all of a sudden you find yourself singing along.
It's amazing how potent and powerful, how much people will just lose their shit when they can sing along, and they know every word, and everybody else pretty much does too, even if they didn't know, even if they didn't think they did. And it's like, oh yeah.
It's like the art of getting a room of complete strangers all together and showing them what they all have in common at the same time.
That's just what America needs right now.
You wait for our Toby Keith men.
A couple weeks later, I went to their New Year's Eve show, and as promised, people sang along. Hell, people screamed along. And we all rang in the new year together. Also, as promised, a group of strangers was brought very close together. It gave me a hopeful start for the new year, with the 90s getting me excited for the rest of the 2020s. Isn't it ironic? Don't you think?
You've been listening to Miniculture on KFAI. Support for Miniculture comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For more stories like this, check out the Miniculture tab on kfai.org.
It is pledge drive time here on KFAI. Right now, you give us a call at 612-375-9030. 612-375-9030. Again, that number is 612-375-9030. Keep KFAI around with a pledge today. Give us a call at 612-375-9030 or visit kfai.org.
This is 10,000 Fresh Voices, a project of Miniculture. I'm your host, Erica Janik. Every Tuesday night, Choir Walk With Me gathers to practice. The small group sings a diverse mix of songs and prides itself on celebrating the esoteric and weird. KFAI's Angela Lundberg brings us the story.
It's a Tuesday night, and Choir Walk With Me is doing its warm-up vocals. The group's name is a play on the David Lynch film Fire Walk With Me, and they sing all kinds of songs, from classic crooners to indie rock. Choir Walk With Me is a small choir comprised of about 15 singers based out of South Minneapolis. But this is not your average choir. It's oddball songs and diverse members redefine what a choir is expected to sound and be like.
When you motor away, beyond the what's down lifts, when you free yourself from the chance of a lifetime.
Peter Hogan has led the choir since February 2024. With an extensive musical background, Hogan chooses a unique mix of songs and does all of the arrangements himself.
We sing a wide variety of stuff, going from Dean Martin and Roy Orbison to, we did a Rihanna song last year. We've done Magnetic Fields, Cher, Joanna Newsom, and The Fall. And it's all just stuff that I like. I have kind of eclectic tastes. I take a little bit of input from people, but as we say at the beginning of each season, this is not a democracy, which is funny, sort of, hopefully.
Even if it's not a democracy, so to speak, the choir members definitely have songs they like to perform as a group. Maggie Hogan's favorite song is Masterpiece by Big Thief.
It's one that makes a lot of people cry, but it is just beautiful and it's lovely to sing.
Jane Hornsby also loves Masterpiece and was surprised at how emotional performing can be.
I think there's a spiritual element to it. Like, sometimes art makes us emotional and there's tears and we hug each other, and sometimes it makes us laugh, and we're just kind of together through all of the emotions, and I think that that's really powerful.
On the opposite side of sad, teary ballads, Amy Wilkerson prefers more upbeat songs.
Well, I really liked when we sang Tip City by the Amps, and I like songs that we can scream more and kind of get things out. There's a lot of anxieties in the world now, and it's kind of a therapy.
Wilkerson first joined another choir years ago in the midst of a deep depression, but singing helped her recover.
Oh, I find joy in this choir. It's silly, it's kinky, it's sassy.
The Boston Stars said it was good. Whoa, 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 whoa.
In addition to the whoops and hollers of songs like Tip City, everyone in Choir Walk with Me agrees that there's something more meaningful at work than just having fun and blowing off steam. This is Jess Buns.
I've had a lot of mental health struggles, and it's been a good place for me to turn when I'm feeling down, and I know that I have people who have my back and love me and like want me to succeed, and singing is just so good for my overall well-being.
But what if you're afraid you can't sing? Director Peter Hogan, who is lovingly nicknamed Choir Daddy, says that doesn't matter.
And I don't really want to audition people. I don't want it based on skill. I want it more based on personality. And if they can sing well, that's a bonus, but I'd rather have people sound a little rough around the edges, but enthusiastic, than super polished and classically trained.
Joining a choir is also a great way to try something new and get out of your comfort zone. Maggie Hogan found a way to do just that.
I decided to join choir because it was a whole new thing for me, and it kind of fires up a whole different side of my brain. I'm used to having very, very sporty type hobbies, and this is just something that allows me to express myself in a whole different way.
Despite having a musical background dating back to childhood, Jane Hornsby says they still struggle with insecurities.
I'm from a very musical family, but I've always been insecure about my own musical abilities. But doing it with a group makes me feel like the stakes are lower and I can have fun with it and just sing, which I really enjoy.
Jess Buns adds,
I consider us a family. I don't know if every choir feels like a family, but this one certainly does, and I'm really grateful for it.
Whenever the choir members part ways after practice or a performance, you could say that reuniting again is often just like they never said goodbye. This is Angela Lundberg for KFAI Radio.
You've been listening to Mini Culture on KFAI. Support for Mini Culture is provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For more stories like this, check out the Mini Culture tab on KFAI.org.
You are listening to Mini Culture on KFAI. A growing body of science around memory choirs is changing the conversation about treating and living with dementia. For this story, KFAI contributor and documentary filmmaker Mercedes Kane joined Grant West, a member of the dementia-friendly choir Amazing Grace, at a rehearsal in St. Paul, where choir members make music and new memories together. At 77 years old, Grant West has devoted most of his life to music. He's a jazz pianist, a guitarist, songwriter, and teacher. The music school he co-founded in St. Paul is now one of the oldest music schools in the country, founded by African Americans. Most nights, he chooses to sleep in his basement studio next to a piano, instead of in bed with his wife, because he wants to make sure he captures any musical ideas that jolt him awake before he forgets them.
My dad kind of summed it up when he says, you know, you learn that music, and that's something nobody can take away from you. If you can build your life around something that that you have put there, that nobody can mess with it.
Things being taken away, messed with, forgotten, that's been on Grant's mind since he began noticing meaningful memory loss.
Yeah, I'll, you know, we'll start a conversation or something, and then it's like, you know, you kind of hit a wall, and you're trying to maintain a frame of thought. So that's part of it. I think that, you know, that it's related to memory, but it's kind of an erosion of confidence. You know, you're searching for words. You know what you want to say. You know who the person is that you're referencing. But now you're kind of on the spot, you know.
It's a special day.
It is. It is. You know, it almost feels like Christmas.
Grant regularly rehearses with Amazing Grace, a dementia-friendly choir that meets at Walker West, the music academy he co-founded with Reverend Carl Walker.
We come together and we sing. You know, we have our commonality, and a lot of commonality of experience. It's a very caring, friendly environment, and people take care of people. You got older people, and you've got not so old people, and you got people who are going to get old. In many cases, you're doing things that you have learned, songs that you have learned as, you know, as a youth growing up. And so the music, you know, awakens all of this thing for learning, and it motivates because it's familiar.
For Grant, the music might take him back to his childhood in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
I grew up in Cheyenne, Wyoming. For me, it was a childhood of, I would say, discovery. In some ways, it was kind of a fight to validate who I was in the context of the community there. We hunted deer, antelope. We fished. In high school, I competed in sports. I did music. It was, to some extent, it was a tough place to be culturally. Not a lot of support in the establishment for the challenges of a young black person growing up. The choir has a reach that adds camaraderie to the experience that the people have. It gives people a chance to validate each other, to validate the experience that we've shared.
The validation Grant describes is likely doing more for his brain health than he realizes. Neurologists have begun to study the effects of social singing on aging participants and those with dementia to see if choirs like Amazing Grace can prevent or slow the disease, or at the very least, improve their quality of life. For Grant, the healing power of music is undeniable.
I think that music has always been medicine in my life. Music is a place in my brain that continues to expand. It's a place that has built-in rewards. It has built-in architecture. I can hear something and be inspired by it. Music keeps you young and relevant. Yeah, keeps me young and relevant.
The story was written by Mercedes Kane and edited by Rob McGinley Myers. Field recording by Marius Anderson. Mercedes is currently working on a film about memory choirs called Sound Memories. For more information and to watch a trailer, you can visit daisymayfilms.com/soundmemories.
Thank you very much for tuning in and for your continued support of KFEI, going strong for well over 40 years now. Thanks to you and thanks to our wonderful community of listeners, our volunteers, and especially the supporters. Become a member of the KFEI family today at KFEI.org just by clicking the donate button. You make this amazingly and likably weird little radio station possible. We know that you come here because you like it weird. I like it weird too. You are listening to Mini Culture Presents, KFEI's documentary showcase program and home of the great Mini Culture work that local Minnesota producers keep kicking out, these great Minnesota-centric pieces. If you'd like to hear anything that we've played on the program today again, visit Mini Culture's SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com. Everything you've heard today was produced here, right here at the station at KFEI. Please help us to keep these sort of hyper-local stories on the air. You can do that at kfei.org/donate. Right now, you can also give us a call at 612-375-9030. 612-375-9030. Again, that number is 612-375-9030. Help KFEI to continue to bring you these stories. Help us to keep this station vibrant and vital. We want you to be a part of this community. You can do that right now at kfei.org and click donate, or by calling 612-375-9030. And thank you. You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFEI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and St. Paul, radio without boundaries. Support for Mini Culture is made possible by a grant from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Support for this program comes from KFEI listener members just like you. Call now, 612-375-9030. My name is Michael Whetstone. Thanks for joining me here on Mini Culture Presents. Please help us to keep this community going and growing with a donation today. Up next, the Upside Down, keeping KFEI undeniably weird and wonderful. Give them a call now at 612-375-9030. Turn your pockets inside out for the Upside Down.
find my true love coming my way. I say, Lord have mercy, mama, it's just good to see you coming today.